ॐ भद्रं हरणे विश्वनियामते वाः भद्रं पश्ये माक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैः सुष्ठुवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। नायम् आत्मा बलहीनेन लभ्यः नायम् आत्मा बलहीनेन लभ्यः न च प्रमादात् तपसो वाप्यलिङ्गात् न च प्रमादात् तपसो वाप्यलिङ्गात् एथायरुपायर्यतते यस्तु विद्वान् एथायरुपायर्यतते यस्तु विद्वान् तस्यैष आत्मा विशते ब्रह्मधाम तस्यैष आत्मा विशते ब्रह्मधाम। न अयम् आत्मा बल न अयम् आत्मा बलहीनेन लभ्यः न च प्रमादात् तपसः वा अपि अलिङ्गात् एतैः उपायैः यतते यः तु विद्वान् तस्य एषः आत्मा विशते ब्रह्मधाम। In the previous verse, the self is not gained by studying and reciting the Vedas. It's not gained by having a wonderful memory, medha shakti. It's not gained by that. It's not gained by even by much listening or much study of all of the different shastras. You know, not even by shravana. It's not even by that. What is it? What is it? By which this self is gained. He says, this Atma is gained by the one who chooses it. Right? It's by that. The one who chooses the Atma, it is by that choosing that the Atma is gained. And for that one who has chosen this Atma, for that one, this Atma reveals itself. So, that requires him unfolding. We worked on it last week, but this part of it now Shankara introduces, and he introduces this verse in his Bhasha. He says, "Atma prarthana sahaya bhutani etani cha sadhanani." What he says is, for that one who prays for the self knowledge, prays to know the self. Prarthana means prayer. That's the type of choosing. It's not choosing in the sense of grabbing or what. It's choosing in the sense of prayer where you ask Bhagavan, please, I want to know myself. The self is what I want to know. I want to know the truth. It's more than just a desire for an object in the world. It's the desire that comes after one has this sadhana chatushtaya, the viveka vairagya. Viveka is that discrimination, realizing that everything here is finite. It can't give me anything lasting. When I understand that, I develop a vairagya, means a dispassion toward these things. Not that they're not good or good in themselves, but they can't solve this problem. So I recognize the world cannot solve the problem of my wholeness. And that what I need to know, this Mumukshutvam begins, this desire for liberation begins with the recognition that the world cannot solve this problem that I'm seeking for, which is my own fullness, my wholeness, well-being that's not time-bound. When that Mumukshutvam, that desire for liberation, rises, then the person turns to Bhagavan, returns to the, recognizes the problem, and prays to have this knowledge, to know this. What is the truth? What is the fulfillment of being of a human being? What is the truth of all of this? And that mumukshutvam converts into what we call jignasa, the desire to know. Jignasa, mumukshu means the desire to be free. That desire to be free has to convert to the desire to know. And there's a logic. The teacher makes sure that the student understands the logic of that conversion. The logic is basically this. I want to be free, but the freedom that I seek, the well-being that isn't subject to time, that isn't subject to change, the wholeness that I seek, is not something that, it's not a freedom that I can gain, that I can do anything to gain. Because if I have to do anything to gain it, even in terms of reaching it, or in terms of purifying something that's sullied, or in terms of acquiring something, if I have to do anything whatsoever to gain it, I am now once again existing in time-bound reality. Because it's something that I don't have now, therefore I am different from that. If I am different from that liberation that I seek, there's duality. If there's duality, there's simply because I'm different from it. If there's duality, there's time. If there's time, then this liberation then is just another thing to acquire. It's another state of experience that will last as long as I, as it does. It's gained in time, it'll end in time. And so that mumukshutvam converts itself. It doesn't go away until it's resolved, but it converts itself into the desire to know. Because the fact is, I either am free and I don't know it, or I'm not free, and therefore I never will be free. If I'm not free, in truth, then all I can do is follow Dharma and do my best in the creation in order to manage the creation and to manage my shanti by living a dharmic life, by staying out of trouble, by trying to fulfill as many desires as I can. That's all that I can do. Because intrinsically, I am not free. And so nothing is going to make me free if intrinsically I'm not free. If intrinsically I am free, if that is my nature, if my nature is whole and complete, again, there is nothing I can do. Because I already am that. You know, like Swamiji says, you can't grow another... If you ask me for anything, just don't ask me for another head on your shoulders. Meaning... it's already there. So if my self is already whole and complete, what can I do to gain it? I already am that. And so now, the problem of bondage and liberation is no longer a problem of gaining or reaching. It's a problem of knowledge and ignorance. Right? And so the mumukshu, the mumuksha, which mumuksha means desire for liberation, transforms itself into jignasa. That self, the desire now is the desire to know myself, to gain myself. How can I gain myself? Only in terms of knowledge. I can't gain a self that is already there. So I pray for myself. Atma Prarthana. Literally it says I'm praying for myself. What does that mean? I'm praying to know myself. And praying to gain myself, to gain knowledge of myself. So now, that was in the first verse. It is that mumukshutvam, that sadhana chatushtaya, the viveka, the vairagya that leads to the mumukshutvam that then transforms itself into jignasa. It is that type of a buddhi, that person has the antakarana, has the mind, which is the sadhana. Now that's the upaya. That is, that mind now is capable of gaining this knowledge. It is capable of recognizing the self. Now, as in the previous verse, to gain this self is not, to gain the knowledge of this self is not like gaining the knowledge of a painting or gaining a knowledge of an object that's away from me. It's a gain only in terms of the recognition of what is already there. So in that way, this self reveals itself to me. The teacher is unfolding it. The teacher is unfolding to make the mind recognize what is already there. So the conscious being that I am reveals itself as Brahman, as limitless. In the light of this teaching, right? In the light of this teaching, this Atma comes to reveal itself. Because it's not something that's away from me. That's the idea. It's Swetta Siddha. It's self-evident, self-effulgent. So as the Upanishad is unfolding it, then the student recognizes that this self that is already here, that is already self-evident, that this self is infinite. It is the being that I seek. The seeker recognizes that. And then the seeker is resolved, in fact, in the sought, which is myself. And so now, Shankara says, for the one who has prayed for this Atma, who is the Jignasu, the one who desires to know, who wants to know, he says, Sahaya Bhutani, Etani, these things are helpers. These things will help that person. This is the way. These are the means, the upayas, the sadhanas. He starts with sadhanas. These are the sadhanas. These are the means which are going to, which will help. Sahaya means they're helpers, which are helpers, which will come to the aid, which will help the one who is praying for this knowledge, for that self-knowledge. So, what are they? Now the verse. He starts with the negative. Ayam atma, na ayam atma, balahinena labdhiha. This atma na labdhiha. It can't be gained. It won't be gained. It's potential participle. Na labdhiha. It won't be gained. Balahina. Balahinena. By a person who is lacking strength. Who is without strength. Bala means strength. Hina means without. Without strength. So a person who's not strong, that person, the Atma can't be gained by that person. What do they mean by strong? They definitely don't mean muscles. And they don't mean physical strength. They don't mean strength in terms of social standing. They don't mean financial strength. They don't mean academic strength. They don't mean any strength that's external. They mean the strength of mind for the person who has viveka, vairagya, shama, dhamma, upadati, titiksha, all of these sadhana chatushtya, who has that strength of mind of those qualities that resolve in atmajnana. The person who has nishta, right, is strong. The person who has the qualities that lead to that nishta, that strength of knowledge, is strong. So the person, the viveki, who is being exposed to this knowledge, so you're exposed to the knowledge, you have the strength of knowledge backing you, and it is that mind that has the strength of knowledge with the viveka, vairagya, and the shama, dhamma, the ability to control the mind, right? The ability to bring the sense organs back, to be able to you know how a good parent loves the child and is also able to say no? The parent, good parent, loves the child, lets the child grow, and also controls the child. If the child's doing something harmful, no. If the child is learning, behaving in a way that is rude, no. Right? And so the parent, the child is not ruling the parent. The parent is controlling and containing the child. And with that containment, the child can grow. So in that way, the one who has knowledge, who has viveka, who has the strength of this teaching, who has shravana, who has satsang. Satsang is important in this. Satsang really means the company of the good. By the company of the good, it means that the people that you associate with are people who share your values, like people who you want to be like them, or they want to be like you. They're people that that help you to become what you want to be. That's satsang. And so even this, when we meet together, you know, once or twice a week, as often as we can, satsang. Because there's a community of people who have a shared vision and shared values. And so that gives strength. And that strength is internalized. And so it's the viveka, the vairagya, your understanding that the buddhi gains, that is then able to control, and I don't mean control in a negative way, I mean control in a positive way. I could even say instead of control, to handle, to take care of the mind. To take care of the mind that runs out with this habit or runs out with that habit and is behaving in a way that is not true to your knowledge. It's not about a Vedanta stick where you whip the child because it's not behaving. It's rather bringing your knowledge into the situation because your knowledge is strong enough to do that. Mm-hmm. Your understanding is strong enough to be brought into the situations that the mind finds itself having to... the situations the mind finds itself in. And the situation, the mind finds itself in those situations because of the sense organs. Right? Because the sense organs experience. But the sense organs are not a problem, really. They're just simply reporting. reporting the situation. If your eyes are open, your sense organs, you're seeing the situation. But because your eyes are open and you're seeing the situation, the mind can get itself into trouble by the way it responds and handles a given situation. And so a lot of that, initially anyway, is going to be done unconsciously, automatically, habitually. And so the mind, the strength of the mind has to develop and grow in the light of your knowledge. Right? As the knowledge of your mind, the understanding of your mind grows to become stronger than the sense pursuits or the fancies of the mind. Your knowledge becomes stronger than that. And then it can bring it back. If the fancy is harmless, it doesn't matter. If it's harmful or if it's getting you into trouble, if it's causing pain for you or others, then you bring the mind back by your knowledge, through your knowledge. And so what we say in one this little story that's often told in the just in the tradition is that for you need to, the student keeps close to the teacher, keeps close to satsang, keeps exposing yourself into knowledge until that's not necessary. And the example that's used to highlight that is, say for instance, two examples is, if you plant a little tree, you know, it's just a little tiny tree, little baby. You plant it in the ground, and you're watering it and caring for it. But you also put a protective wire mesh fence around it. Because it's so small that the animals, the deer, could just come and swallow it up just like that. And so you give it some protection. But as you water and care for the tree, as the tree grows, it ends up expanding, you know, and breaking down the protection, absorbing the protection into itself. It no longer requires it at all. That's the balahi. That's the strength. The other example in the Bhagavad Gita they use, if you have say you're on the beach and you build a big bonfire, with all kinds of wood and kindling and everything, you have to light it. So when you start, you light a little corner of it, this huge thing. Light a little corner. Well, you have to protect that light. Because a little wind comes, you blow it right out. So you have to fan it and protect it from the wind. You know, and put like dry grass and everything until it catches. But as it catches, it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Until at some point, the big gush of wind may come and it'll just make it burn more. Right? And so until we have that strength, you need the protection of satsang. That's why, you know, I used to joke that when I was first in India listening to Swamiji, I'd be sitting and we'd be in the big hall the Yajnashala, it's called, he'd be teaching. And my room was probably, 100 feet away. It's, up the hill, and quite a ways away. And I used to wonder if I would ever be able to make it back to my room without the vision that I had seen so clearly, in that hour. It was so clear to me. Would I ever make it all the way to my room before it closed over? Because I remember it used to close over. I would be like, 10 steps out of the lecture hall, and there it would go. But until that doesn't happen, right? Until that doesn't happen, until the buddhi is stronger than all of the impressions in the mind, until then, that mind has to be protected. And so this Atma is not available. It can't be gained by that mind. When the mind is in control, when the sense organs are in control, when the habits are in control, when that's what's having the strength, then there's no nishtha there. Right? And so until that nishtha and strength is there, right, then you protect it. You build up your muscles. Okay? So, na ayam atma balahine na labhyaha, it's not gained by that, na cha pramadat, nor from indifference. Pramada, Shankara talks about pramada. It often translates as indifference or slothfulness or laziness. He translates it as vairagya. If the pramada is there, there's no vairagya. And he looks at it like this, and Swamiji is unfolded on this also. For a mumukshu, gaining this knowledge is what is primary because of the viveka vairagya. Without the viveka, there is no mumukshutvam. Viveka means I've recognized that what I need, that my fullness, the ananda, the wholeness that I seek, cannot be gained in the world. That viveka is complete for the mumukshu. The viveka for the jnani that's not complete for the jnani. For the jnani, both halves are there. For the viveka is this. I realize that the wholeness, I've realized fully as a mumukshu, that the wholeness that I seek cannot be gained from the world of change. And I have realized fully that the wholeness that I seek is the Atma, which is Brahman. That I know. That's the state of jnana. For the viveka is complete for the jnani. For the mumukshu, what is primary for me has got to be knowing myself. The mumukshu twam that converts to the jignasa, that becomes primary. If it's not primary, then this is just one of the topics of interest. If Vedanta is just a topic of interest for you, you're not an adhikari for this knowledge. Now, this doesn't mean that all of us, every human being, does many, many things throughout the day, many responsibilities. But we do things that we want to do, we go away from things that we don't want to do, all of these things, like human life, human beings, life. But what is primary? Are these various pursuits my means for happiness? This is one of my pursuits for happiness. This is one of my pursuits for happiness. This is one of my pursuits for happiness. I mean, really, I need this in order to become happy. That means I haven't understood. So for the mumukshu, for the jignyasu, right, what is understood is that the source of ananda has nothing to do with this. And what I'm seeking has nothing to do with this. And therefore, this world, which I can be fully, wholly engaged in and should be, because I'm a human being and I'm living in it, so like it or not, you are fully, wholly engaged in it. You can pretend not to be, but then you're fully, wholly engaged in pretending not to be, because you exist here. You exist. You have a physical body. You have sense organs. You have a mind. You have people. You are placed here in this creation. So in fact, how can you be more engaged? Your mind is totally engaged. Even if your mind is totally engaged in trying not to be engaged, it is totally engaged in that. It is totally engaged in whatever it is doing. Your sense organs are totally engaged in whatever they are doing. And so now, what does your engagement have to be? What has to be directing your engagement in order to gain this knowledge? Viveka, vairagya, shama dhamma, pariti tadiksha, mumukshutvam. The sadhana chatushtya that makes you this fourfold sadhana that makes you an adhikari for this knowledge. What it means now, when they say adhikari, adhikari means a person who is qualified to gain this knowledge. That's what an adhikari is. Right? And so, who is the adhikari? Who is available for this knowledge? The one who wants it. The one who wants to know. What if they want to know as though that what they're going to know is an object of knowledge? Where Swamiji is, I saw this in his bhasha. I've also told this many times. And I saw it there. He said, what if you want to know the self so that you can teach a class in the Gita? I want to know myself. I want to gain this knowledge. Why? Why do you want to gain it? Well, because, you know, I would really like to go to the United States and teach a class in the Bhagavad Gita. I would really like to have a lot of students. And I hear that in the United States, there are a lot of people that are really interested in this knowledge, and I think that, you know, I could be one of the gurus. This happens. This is Swamiji tells the story. That won't work. You might be able to go to the States and actually teach the Bhagavad Gita, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about gaining this knowledge. So to gain this knowledge, you have to want it. And then, what about all of the other things of your life that unfold for you as your prarabdha? Your job and your responsibility and your family and your children and just life, the life that unfolds. What about that? All of that takes place also, and yes, you are engaged in it. But there's not someone inside who believes that this is what is going to make me happy. Rather, they know, you know, that in fact, it's the way that you deal with your life in the light of your knowledge that can allow you to maintain your shanti. And so your entire life becomes a sadhana, right? It's not about pushing away the life. It's not about not being engaged in it. It's about dealing with it in the light of your knowledge, living it in the light of your knowledge. And so that your buddhi, right, you really recognize as with the karma yoga buddhi, recognizing everything as prasada from the Lord, of this whole karma yoga buddhi that we've been talking about, recognizing all of that allows me to engage in the world in a way that helps me to my mind to gain nishta. So that is the lack of indifference, where no matter what my situation is, what my life is, what is central to that life is jnana nishta. And if it's not that, then this is just an interesting philosophy for you, accepting. Yeah? But what you find, so not to be black and white, so let me not be completely black and white. Let me make it more real, more realistic. Every one of us here in India, period, all of us, we come to this knowledge with a certain degree of mumukshutvam, right? That mumukshutvam is converted to jignas, certain degree of the desire for liberation. That desire for liberation, so that's there. Otherwise, you wouldn't stand it here. But you'd be gone. Then that desire for liberation converts over to jignasa because you understand the problem. The teacher helps you with that. Okay. So that is there. Then you see in yourself, when the teacher starts unfolding viveka, you'll say, well, Pretty much. Vairagya. 50-60%. But I understand. I understand it, but still, you know, Shama Dhamma working on it, Upaditi Diksha working on it. So I see all of them are there, but they're not all complete. That's right. Right? And so as we, this vision, you know, and the mumukshutvam is probably the strongest. Because I've recognized something, you know. I've recognized something. I am a seeker, you know. And so all of these other things, the viveka, vairagya, shamadhamma, all of these other qualities that make me an adhikari, they grow and grow and grow as I listen, as I'm exposed to the teaching, as I understand how to be with my mind, as I understand how to be an inner friend to my mind, as I understand all of it, as all of it becomes clear, then the reality of the situation becomes more and more and more clear. And this adhikarityam grows and grows and grows and grows and grows until it resolves into knowledge. Right? So the great, the adhikari, the one who is the real adhikari, is the jnani, the one who has jnana-nishtha. Because all of them, once they've all fructified, right, then I have jnana-nishtha, I'm rooted in my knowledge. And so that adhikarityam grows and grows and matures into jnana-nishtha, right? So that's a good, that's the truth of it, you know. And so you don't think, it would be incorrect to think, oh, I have these qualities, but I don't have them complete, so I guess I'm not qualified. Believe me, so it would be from Swamiji himself and from all the people that I know who have this knowledge. If you are in, if you can drag yourself to class, right, if you can drag yourself to class, to actually come to class and to be studying this, that mumukshutvam is there. Think about it. What would make a person come to class and listen to this? unless the mind is ready to hear it. If the mind is ready to hear it, these aren't just words, they're words that are penetrating deeply into your actually seeing something, which is very, very important. But it's only seeing something, only very, very important, if that self needs to be known. So then, once that's the case, then all of these different upayas that are going to be taught now, all of these different means, become very important aids. Upayas are aids for gaining this knowledge. So that pramada, that laziness or that indifference, is something which goes away as one gains vairagya. Right? Because vairagya means that all it really means is there's nothing in you that says, you know, this is going to be my source of happiness, or this will be my source of happiness. You realize that may give momentary happiness, but it won't solve the problem at all. And so with that laziness or indifference to this knowledge goes away. It's indifference to gaining this knowledge, because I have so many things to do. You know? We all have so many things to do. So many things. But we're not at all indifferent to gaining this knowledge. So all of the things that we have to do, which are so many, are all viewed as sadhanas. Okay, so then he says, now, not even from tapas, which is a lingot. Tapas, which is without its linga. Now, tapas has to be explained. So he says, not even from tapas. Tapas here is going to be shravana, manana, nididhyasana. It's the actual knowledge itself. Not even from knowledge. Not even from exposure to knowledge. Because first of all, you have to understand the meaning of tapas. Tapas means, it's a word that we use, it's a religious word, spiritual word. We do austerities. We commit ourselves to something for the gain of something. It's a practice, it's an austerity, it's a commitment that we do with an intention. Tapas has an intent, right? And so here the intention is to gain knowledge. Atma Pratana is the prayer to gain the knowledge. That is the intent. When that is the intent, what will the tapas be? What is the primary sadhana? What is the commitment? What is the austerity? The austerity really is that we're, in a sense, turning our back on everything else and seeking to know this. By turning our back on everything else, what I mean is that this becomes the primary commitment which I need to know. And how do I know it? So it's not turning around or rejecting something. It's not a rejection of something. It's a commitment to something. And so with that commitment, then that's where I'm putting my energy. Mm. So that's the tapas. That's the austerity. Mm. And so what is the tapas for Atmajnanam? For gaining myself? Shravana, manana, nididhyasana. Shravana means I'm exposed myself to the teaching. Manana means that there's a lot of big unfoldment on manana we can do, but basically it's removing through thinking all of the doubts. Manana can be divided up. Shravana, I can look at it like this. It's exposing myself to the Shastra. The Shastra itself, the Upanishad itself, gives unfoldment and removes many, many doubts. The Shastra itself does. Right? Things that you would say, well, what about this, and what about this, and what about this? The Shastra itself will take care of that in Shravana. With Manana, Manana is, well, the Buddhists say this, and the atheists say this, and the Christians say this, and the Jews say this, and these people say this, and the Sankhyas say this. What about that? And so then your mind is thinking, well, could that be true? Is that what it is? What do they really mean there? And so Manana can be divided from Shravana in that way, where the Manana was at, where you're actually dealing with doubts that are coming from the world, from all of the different religions, from all of the different spiritual practices, from science, from the whole, all knowledge. You should be able to hold up any knowledge, any belief, any philosophy, and say, what about this? And that, what if that philosophy is saying exactly the opposite? What if science is saying exactly the opposite? So you have to be able to say, what about this? Why do you say that the brain itself is not responsible for consciousness? Mm-hmm. You have to be able to ask all of those things. And Manana is then confronting that doubt with your knowledge. Right? Or in satsang, or in the class itself, the teacher brings that up. In the Brahma Sutras, which is the final text that's really taught, after you've studied all of the Upanishads, all of the Prakarana Granthas, the Brahma Sutra is taught. It has four chapters, the first four major chapters. First chapter is just a thorough analysis of the Shastra, what the Shastra says, and establishing the truth of it. The second chapter is what everybody else says, and then answering those doubts. They're not doubts that arise from the Shastra, they're doubts that arise from other disciplines of knowledge. Laukika is from worldly knowledge, and spiritual disciplines. Those also have to be answered, because your mind has to be able to see. It's not like we're just having Vedanta blinders, you know. Well, Vedanta blinders, don't ask about anything else. You know, we don't want to think outside of our scope. We think outside of our scope, we'll get confused. Knowledge doesn't brook confusion. You know, if there's confusion there, if there's doubt there, if there's curiosity there, that needs to be welcomed, right? And so that tapas then needs to, the shravana, manana, and nididhyasana, the third one, is then really owning up, you know, meditating on what you have clearly seen at the time of teaching, the self that you've recognized at the time of teaching, that I am the whole, what you've seen it at the time of teaching, to sit with that in contemplation and recognize it. That's the sadhana. So that's the tapas. But not even from that, this atma cannot be gained from that either. If it's a lingot, if it doesn't have sannyasa, without linga means what is the marking? What is the indicatory mark of somebody who's doing that? It's sannyasa. So the linga is, it's often called linga, sannyasa is often called that. So without that linga, without the linga of renunciation, this atma can't be gained. So then, of course, the question is, oh my gosh. does this mean I have to take the sannyasa? He says, no, it's guna sannyasa. In fact, there's a big, in the Bhashya, on Shankara's Bhashya, there's a big commentary on this. It's asked the very question, and he asked this question saying, well, you know, Gargi and Jenika and all of these people, they're great jnanis. They didn't take sannyasa. Mm-hmm. Do I have to take sannyasa?
Mm-hmm.
No. But you have to be a sannyasi. You have to be a sannyasi inside. What is a sannyasi inside? It's the one who has viveka and vairagya. How can you not be a sannyasi? You can be totally engaged in the world, but inside you're a sannyasi. Unless you are seeking the world, unless your belief is that I need these things in order to be happy, that means you believe that that will work. If you still believe that will work, then you need to experience the world a little bit more. Because if you go back and look at all of your experiences, you will see you have gained many things in your life which you really wanted, and they were important, and they were did make up the unfoldment of your life. But none of them did anything except give you a momentary experience of happiness. And then they just became like everything else, part of your life. Now you have them as part of your life, and now you are still seeking to become whole. Right? So you gain all of these things, that's true. And you can say they've been very important to your life. I would say they're your prarabdha. They're the natural expression of your life. You work for them and you gain them. And that's all wonderful and you're happy for the moment when you gain them. It lasts for a few minutes or whatever. But then they became part of your life and now we move on for the next thing. Because the fullness has not taken place. The wholeness that all that needs to be done by me is done. I am whole, I am complete, I am full. Let me enjoy this creation. Right? The seeking is still there. Okay, so now, what if the question comes, how do I end seeking? Will I ever be whole and complete? Right? So that's what creates the mumukshu. That's what creates the jignasu. And then that one is what grows and grows and grows, and the person internally becomes a sannyasi. Mm. You may take sannyasa because that's the lifestyle that is appropriate and natural for you, for your karma, you know, for who you are, for the way that your life is unfolded, where you live, who you are, what your culture is, just the what is taking place in your prarabdha. Sannyasa, the taking the orange, or becoming a priest like Greg, whatever. That could be part of your prarabdha. Or it may not be. That's not the issue. You can take the orange and not be a sannyasi inside. You know? You could take the orange so you can teach classes in the Gita in the United States and have lots of students. Or you could take orange so that the people in India would be more inclined to give you bhiksha. Because you're a beggar. And beggars in orange do a lot better than beggars in rags. So make your rags orange. So it's not the orange. It's not about the orange. It's about who you are inside. And so that tapas has got to be associated with that linga. The linga of sannyasa. So the one who has that bhaguna, the sannyasa bhaguna, then for that person, not for the other. So now he says, so he's negated these. Balahina, no. You're weak, no. Pramada, if you're indifferent, no. If you do all of the tapas, all the shravana, manana, nididhyasana, but no sannyasa by guna, by quality, nope, won't happen. But, he says, etaihi upayahi, by these means, by these three, you know, the one who is strong, the one who has these, the one who has that strength, the one who is not indifferent, the one who is gaining knowledge along with the linga, yatate yahatu vidvan. Two means whereas, the vidvan. The vidvan means the one who is the adhikari and is gaining this knowledge. That one who strives, who makes efforts, by these three means having that strength of mind, being committed to this knowledge, having shravana, manana, nididhyasana, with that renunciation, right, with that vairagya. That person, tasya esha atma, this atma for him this atma enters, because of like this, for him this self enters that abode which is Brahman. This self that I am enters, Vishatari, it enters the abode which is Brahman. And you go, it enters? How can the Atma enter? Right? It's and the next verse, because this is a natural doubt, the next verse deals with it, but it's the entry in terms of knowledge. And Shankara uses this, his example for this to see what kind of entry is this. It's just in the same way that the pot space enters the room space if I break the pot. If I have pot space, when this pot is broken, then the pot space enters the room space. Right? That's the kind of entry. The pot space enters the room space. Is there any entry? Right? Because the pot space was never pot space. Right? Pot space, the pot isn't holding the space. If I move the space from A to B, it's not taking the space along with it. There's no pot space. But there's pot space if I think there is. So this Atma is taken to be this body. It's conditioned by the upadis. The Atma is conditioned by the pot of the body, of the sense organs, of the mind. Right? So this is the Atma space. This Atma space is recognized as Brahman. It enters into Brahman, means it's recognized as Brahman, as being limitless as the self and all beings. In other words, it realizes, it breaks out of the upadi, conditioning adjunct, figuratively. And that in that way, it enters into Brahman. It becomes Brahman. Right? Okay. Just taking a minute. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.